Well, hi again. This is Bob Brundage, and today is the November 21st, 2008. And today I'm talking with a gentleman up in Keene, New Hampshire, at the University of New Hampshire. And we're interested to find out more about the Ralph Page, Ted Cinella branch of the library at the university. So this gentleman is Mr. Roland Goodbody, and he's in charge of the archive there, and we'll be finding out more about it as we go along, I'm sure. So Roland, tell us a little bit about yourself. Were you brought up in New England?
No, I grew up in, I'm English, I grew up in southern England, in Hampshire.
Good.
I attended Keele University, which is in the Midlands of England, and it was after graduating from there and spending a year teaching English in northern Spain that I came to the United States. That was back in 1976. I came to do graduate work here at the University of New Hampshire, and I've been here ever since. I've worked at this library since 1986. And, you know, as you mentioned, I'm one of the archivists, and the archivist is the principal coordinator of what we call the New Hampshire Library of Traditional Music and Dance.
Okay.
But I need to correct one thing you said in your introduction. We're actually not in Keene, New Hampshire, but in Durham, New Hampshire, which is exactly the opposite side of the state. So we're in the east of the state.
Ah, okay. Yes, well, I'm glad you straightened that out for me. Thank you.
There is a college at Keene, and it is part of the University of New Hampshire system.
Oh, yes.
If anyone were to come to look for our materials, they'd be quite a way away from where we actually are if they went
to. Oh, I see. Okay. Well, so I think then you're actually west of Keene.
No, east. We're east of Keene. Keene is in the western part of New Hampshire.
So oh, I see. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, we're on the seacoast, New Hampshire.
Oh, yes. Okay. And the name of the town again is?
Durham, or Durham, you'd probably say.
All right.
D-U-R-H-A-M.
Okay. And so over your past experience, did you get involved with square dancing at all? Anytime?
No, I have actually had no experience with square dance. My experience of traditional dance has been in this country and in England to some extent, where it's, we don't call them contra dances, but ceilidhs or country dances.
Yes.
I've sort of flirted with contra dance over the years. You know, I've been to a number of contra dances.
Yes.
From back in the 80s to the present, and I do enjoy dancing. Back in England, though, when I was in college, I danced what's called rapper sword dancing. I don't know if you know about that. I danced it for a few years. It's a tradition that really comes out of the northeast of England, the mining communities up there in around the Newcastle, Durham area, Durham, England area.
Good.
And has the five dancers who dance with flexible swords and in a linked chain.
Yeah.
Dance various figures to, usually to jigs. So that introduced me to the world of folk dance. And over the years, I've become more and more interested in how communities are formed around these folk traditions and customs and the dance and music that goes along with them.
Right.
I also have hosted for 20 years here in Durham at the university a radio show featuring traditional music from what I call the Celtic countries in England.
Uh-huh.
Which includes, I include in that New England, because a lot of the music that's played originally came from either, you know, Ireland or England or Scotland or somewhere like that.
Right.
So that's my connection with the folk dance. And of course, working with the materials here as an archivist has deepened my understanding and knowledge. I was working with a number of people involved in the dance community.
Yes, we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
Can you give me a little overview of the university?
Okay.
I think it's a land-grant college, is it?
Yeah, it is a land-grant college still, but it started as an agricultural college.
Yes.
Founded in 1866 but it's also now a sea and space grant institution.
So
it's sort of expanded its operations.
Yes.
In a fairly big way. I mean, it's got connections with NASA for the space grant stuff, and, you know, there's an island off of Portsmouth where a lot of the sea grant stuff takes place.
Right.
Research into underwater stuff.
And you have several colleges there?
Yeah, there are seven colleges and schools.
Uh-huh.
Undergraduate population is about 12,000, and there's about 2,500 graduate students.
Yes.
It's a New England, what they call a New England liberal arts college, but it's also a major research university, and it's become that since I've been here in the 20-odd years I've been here. There's a strong focus on undergraduate-oriented research.
Yes.
So I said it's located in Durham, which, give you a clue as to where that is, 60 miles north of Boston.
Yes.
It's 12 miles from the city of Portsmouth. It's about 100 miles south of the White Mountains.
Right.
And I'm quoting here from the UNH Admissions Office website, where they say it's nestled in a classic New England setting. And it's true. It's a beautiful, it's compact campus. It's got lots of woods and natural areas right in the center of campus.
Right. Okay, well, would you tell me, do you have any, I'm sure you do, idea of just when the Ralph Page Library collection got to the university?
Yeah, it was back in October 1986, shortly after Ralph died. What happened was a standing committee of the New England Folk Festival Association, NEFA, was formed, the Ralph Page Memorial Fund, they called it, and they bought the materials off of Ada, Ralph's widow. You know, she wanted this to happen, but obviously they decided to do something positive with his collection.
Yeah.
And that Ralph Page Memorial Fund approached the University of New Hampshire as a site to host or to maintain the collection. And Ted Sinella was actually the chairman of that Ralph Page Memorial.
Oh, I see.
So they sold it to us for a small amount of money, a sort of a token amount, you might say.
I see.
And our commitment then was to house it and to maintain it and to make it accessible. And actually, I looked at the, knowing this was going to happen, I looked at the letter that Ted Sinella wrote back in 1986 to the university library at the time. And this is a quote, he says, "It's exactly the sort of place that Ralph would have wanted his collection to reside. His love for the Granite State and its institutions was surpassed only by his love for dance, books, and related materials." And see, what we can do is, since we're, this university is sort of like the flagship public institution in the state, and so anybody can come in and use this material. It's not restricted to our students or faculty. Anybody can come in.
Oh,
this is a good place to put it because of that, because it's publicly accessible, which is what the statement that was written for that gift agreement said. It wanted it to be, the material to be available for researchers, students, and others interested in research in traditional dance music and folklore.
I see.
And the history of it is that the late Mary, I don't know if you knew Marianne Taylor.
Oh, yes, I did.
She recently passed away.
Yes.
And she played a key role in physically bringing the material to UNH, and I worked with her for maybe, you know, she volunteered for maybe a couple of years in the early days back in the late 80s to organize it. Subsequently, we've cataloged it, Library of Congress and all that, but at the time we didn't have the ability to do that, and she organized it and made it usable. So she was a great, great help and a tremendous inspiration, got so much in, had so much energy.
Well, that's great. And so, was she the one responsible for collecting all the materials and so forth and getting it delivered to you then?
Actually, picking them up, I don't know who did that. I think Marianne was a key player because she was, unlike Ted at the time, Ted lived down, as perhaps many of that committee did, lived down in Massachusetts. Marianne lived nearby here in Deerfield.
Yes.
And of course, was good friends with Ralph and Ada, and probably she, I imagine she was the one who went over and physically, or was one of the ones, and was a key player in that, physically picking it up.
Yeah.
Delivering it here. I can't remember. I was actually, I started here in 1980, right around that time, a little bit, a couple of months beforehand.
Yes.
So I was brand new and didn't really know what was going on back then.
I understand, right.
So I wasn't really involved in any of the negotiations. I think actually wasn't even done here. It was done at a higher level.
Uh-huh.
But I did then work with her in the very early days. I remember it's first coming here. And then, you know, also, she was a key figure in establishing what has become the Ralph Page Dance Legacy Weekend here at the University
right.
of New Hampshire every January. And I, what was it? We're in the,
yes,
the 20th, 21st year, I think.
Right. Oh, that long, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, can you give us a little description of the amount of material that you have there? I know you must have, do you have all of the copies of Northern Junket, for example?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have, I think we have four or five complete runs of the Northern
Junket. Oh, do you really? Good.
And it's also, that's one of the things that we've digitized. So that's actually viewable online.
Yes.
We did that, actually, with some money left to us by the Sonella estate. So we recycled the money and put it to good use in that way. So, yeah, we have the complete run of Ted, of Ralph's Northern Junket, but you know, we have in his manuscript collection, we have a large amount of correspondence, a few of his manuscripts, scrapbooks, festival programs, dance programs. He collected sheet music and dance camp syllabi, lots of photos, and even some films. Some old films, that most of which were done, looked like they were done out in the College of the Pacific in Stockton, California.
Yes, I remember that.
So that's in Ralph. Then, of course, we have, I've forgotten, I don't know if I can call it up right now, yeah, you know, close to 1,000 books.
Is that right? Well, that's
yeah,
great.
And lots of recordings, including, I would say, almost all of Ralph's.
Did he record on other labels than Folk Dancer?
Mainly on Folk Dancer. I think there's one or two on others, but mainly Folk Dancer.
Yes.
We have all of those except we're missing, I think, two. The version of Hull's Victory and Garfield's Hornpipe that have holes on them.
That was one of his early ones, I think. Okay, well, that's a nice definition. Thank you very much. And then after Ted Sonella passed away, tell us a little. I was going to ask you some of the same questions about his collection.
Yeah, well, Ted died in 1995, and shortly after that, Bill Ross, who's the department head here, and I went up to Wiscasset, Maine, to up to Ted and Jean's house, because they lived up in Maine at that, by, you know, the last 5 or 6 or 7 years there, and brought the collection back here, because Ted had left his personal dance collection to UNH, and I think partly because of his connection to Ralph Page, but primarily because of its, by that time, its concentration of folk dance and music materials. It by then had become called the New Hampshire Library of Traditional Music and Dance, and it didn't just, it started with the Ralph Page collection.
Yes.
Back in 86, but grew, and then we got, I think as a result of having Ralph's stuff, the Country Dance and Song Society approached us about housing their library. So then we took that on, and then it started. And by the time Ted passed away, we'd had other collections, a small amount of Dudley Loffman's and Gene Gowing's and, you know, a number of other individuals. So the collections were building, and we decided to put them under an umbrella of the New Hampshire Library of Traditional Music and Dance. So by the time Ted passed away, he wanted his collection to be a part of that, and in fact it's a significant part of it. I think it's fair to say that Ralph Page, Ted Sinella, and the Country Dance and Song Society collections are the cornerstone of the library of folk music and dance.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't realize it was that extensive.
Yeah, in fact, you know, in that letter I was mentioning, Ted had written in 1986, he said then, when signing over the Ralph Page collection to this library, you will discover that you have what may well be the most complete collection of country dance material in the United States. Well, then with, you know, the addition of his own collection and the CDSS and others, this is even more true, so it's likely that, I can't definitely say this because I don't know everything that's out there, but it's quite likely that we do have, by now, the best collection of country dance material.
Well, I'm sure it must be. Right. Well, that's very, very interesting. So, do you get much requests from people outside of your student body?
Well, we don't get a large amount, no, but the requests that we do get are usually quite involved, often require a fair bit of research and labor, you know, such as recording projects for people. For instance, in the past, we've provided access, and I assisted David Millstone while he was here in the research he did for his documentary films about Bob McQuillan and Dudley Loffman. There's a recording label over near Keene, actually, in the western part of the state, called Great Meadow Music, and they hired a guy to do a film about the contra dancing, which was released as Together in Time, and he came here and did that. Steve Alves, his name was. He knew nothing about contra dance when he came. He was a filmmaker. So that involved sitting with him and helping him understand, you know, introducing him to the materials that he could then read and get a better understanding of the history of what he was making a film about, so he wasn't totally clueless about it. There was a special dance done a few years back of Ted Sinella's triplets.
Yes.
So we had to document all those, you know, make sure that we had them all, so that they could do this comprehensive. They did a dance of all of, at the time I think we thought there were 33, I think subsequently I've discovered that there are some more. So, and Ted's collection includes all these index cards of dances that he called, many of which he composed himself.
Yes.
It's an absolutely tremendous gem of a resource, you know. So you can come and learn Ted's dances. And he was very organized. He's got the date that it was originally composed and then the date of a revision if he changed it and what he changed and everything.
Right. Well, that's
wonderful.
Interesting. A little earlier you mentioned that someone is actually able to scan off some of the material that you have online. Can you tell me how that works?
Well, in the case of that, the Northern Junket, you currently would go through our website.
Yes.
Or the library's website to the digital library, and you find it there, and you can view it online, and then you can print it from there.
Oh, that's...
Yeah. Right. So that's how that works. I'm hoping, I mean, I've only discovered this partly as a result of your knowing that you'd be calling me, looked into that. I spent, I don't know, a year, 1,000 hours, I mean, a good part of a year, converting the Roger Knox index to the Northern Junket.
Oh, did you really?
Digital format, and marking it up, you know, doing the coding so that in the format it was before it, the way it is now, you could go to the index, you could click on a dance, and it would take you to the exact page, the exact dance and the exact page. You wouldn't have to go through this finding out if it's volume 13, issue number 6, page. It would just take you right there. Well, that seems to have been left out of the current thing, so I'm going to have to approach our digital people and see if we can't restore that, because we don't. The whole point is to make it easy to use. So currently, you go through the digital library here at UNH and FICE.
Right.
But I think what we also ought to do, there's this national, well, they call it the Internet Archive. That's a national site, if you like, where you can go and look up all the stuff that's been contributed to them by various libraries and other institutions all over the country. It's a sort of central clearinghouse for that. Now, Northern Junkets not in that, but I talked with Bill yesterday about we should do that. We should send our digital files to them, and then anybody can go there, and, you know, a central place instead of having to come to our website to find it. But that would be just the Northern Junket.
Yes.
Not the rest of the collection.
Is that part of the Library of Congress, or...?
No, it's not. It's actually a standalone thing. It's called the Internet Archive, and their address, web address, is www.archive.org. That's archive without the S on the end, singular. And you go there, and you have a choice of looking up text stuff or other kinds of audio or something else. And
you say that's archives without the S?
Right, www.archive.org.
Yes. Oh, that's great. I'm sure
I don't think that is part of the... I'm not actually sure about who's behind the name. But.
Yes. Okay, well, we should spend a minute talking about your cooperation with the Square Dance Foundation of New England.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think your major contact has been Jim Mayo.
Yeah, let me tell you how that started. When David Millstone was making his documentary film about Dudley Loughton, he came here, where he'd also already been a number of times for the Bob McQuillan film and just for other projects. But then he went to one of the other places he went. He went to lots of places for that film, but it was the Square Dance Foundation in New England.
Yes.
And so really, the connection between us and Square Dance Foundation is David Millstone's. It was his suggestion that we speak with each other, because when he was there, he learned that they were worried about losing the facility in the foreseeable future, and also they're concerned that, you know, they're largely older members. I mean, there's not a huge contingent of young people in their organization, so they're worried about their legacy. So David contacted me, and he said, you and they should get together, should talk about whether there's a chance for that. So Jim and I did talk about the possibility of our becoming officially, in some official capacity, affiliated with each other, working together.
Yes.
And what we did was agree, as what we've got, the arrangement we have now, is that initially selected materials from their library would be donated to us to make them more available. Now, right now, they're only stuff that's duplicated in both places, so it's not like we're taking the original stuff and they don't have it. They have a copy, and they're filling in gaps in the collection, because given the people who were involved, whose collections we already had, some of the material was already Square Dance related. We had quite a lot of Square Dance magazines, you know, whole runs of that. So what the Square Dance Foundation in New England has done there is just fill in the gaps. But there are also many other titles that we just didn't have, books and pamphlets and stuff. So Jim is sort of the coordinator of that. He physically delivers the stuff here, and you know, I've got to know him over the last couple of years and sat and chatted with him and got to know more about Square Dance and the history of it and how it fits into the bigger scene of the traditional dance in this country.
Right.
So, and also, recently, a few months back, I went over to their facility, which, by the way, is a lovely, in a beautiful building, right in one of the old mill buildings in Manchester, New Hampshire, right on the river there. A lovely space. I went over with our museum curator, who was interested in seeing what they have for costumes.
Yes.
So we went over there, and we spent 4 hours or something, sat, you know, had a great lunch there, the Anna Dixon got together, and we had a look at the place and walked around it and was shown it, and partly as a result of that, our museum curator has made a commitment to take 20 to 30 of the dresses in the collection to preserve them, and and also to show them, because what she wants to do is an exhibit eventually that will present the history of traditional folk dance and its development into, you know, how it sort of became separate communities with common roots, the contra dance and the square dance world.
Right.
So give that history and also have some visual stuff, the dance, you know, the costumes. But also we'll keep the costumes permanent. So little by little, I think we're working towards taking more and more of the materials. But, you know, we have space considerations and, you know, we have limited ability to, we can't devote all our time to working on it. And one of the difficulties, I suppose I'm jumping to a later question here, but one of the difficulties is that this isn't the only thing I work on. I mean, I have literary collections I work on, Civil War collections, all sorts of other materials. It's a fairly big collection here in, or group of collections in what's called special collections in the UNH Library. And the New Hampshire Library Tradition of Music and Dance is just, one part of it. But, so it means that there's limited time to devote to it. I can't exclusively work on it. And so what's happening is Jim will bring stuff over in batches, and we work on them.
Right.
Send them through to cataloging and all that.
Yes.
Sort of thing.
Well, I understand, yes. So you say you're still having the Legacy Weekend?
Oh, yeah. Well, now, Mary, I'm interested in seeing what happens, because Marianne, I think she wasn't playing quite a key role in, not a central role in it, lately as she was in the early years, but with her passing,
yes.
She was an ever-present member of the board and the committee that made that happen. But, yeah, they've already got, I mean, it's more than planned. I think it's a definite thing for this coming January.
Right.
And they're going to focus, each year they have a different focus, and this time it's somewhat unusual. French-Canadian music, the influence of French-Canadian music.
Yes.
On the dance. And so there's a band from Quebec coming down,
right.
As well as New England. But yep, so it'll be the 22nd year coming up. And I think it will continue. It's a very popular dance in the calendar, the year's calendar.
Right. Well, this has certainly been a very interesting conversation, Roland, and I appreciate your taking the time to sit down and talk with me today. We're getting down near the end of this tape, but is there anything else you'd know that I've missed that you want to put out?
Well, you know, I mean, you alluded to future plans or aspirations.
Yes.
And I'll quickly address that. I mean, I think there are a number of concerns we should address here in the near future. Because my pet peeve, we need more staffing, but everybody would say that. But we really need to address the issue of preservation of materials that are at risk, you know, like cassettes have to be played, strictly speaking. You have to play a cassette in real time once a year to keep it.
Uh-huh.
You know, to stop this transfer, sticky tape syndrome. And we have thousands and thousands of them. Reel-to-reel tapes need converting, so we need to digitize more.
Yes.
And through the digitization process, you can kill two birds with one stone, because you preserve it, but you also have it in a format now that you can, where you can create greater access to it, and you know, in some cases, put it online, or at least some minutes of it. There's a long audio work you can make some of it. We've got some initiatives there. We're part of it's not as yet funded grant project, pilot project in New England to digitize some audio materials. That's headed up by the Maine Folklife Center, and the Vermont Folklife Center has something to do with it. But, you know, it's just a small step. I don't think we can wait on, especially in this economy, federal monies to start the effort. We need to do some of it ourselves. And in many ways, the Square Dance Foundation in New England's ahead of us there. I mean, they've been great. I've been very impressed by the work they're doing to digitize materials of their own where appropriate. You know, they use digital camera to do thousands of photographs.
Yes.
And so that if they do lose the physical space to display the stuff, they can put it online. It's still there. And in their case, the necessity's been the child of invention. They've been sort of forced to think. think about it because they fear that that facility is going to go away. So they've been proactive, and I think they're a good model for us. My last thing, if I ruled the world, I would have the New Hampshire Library of Traditional Music and Dance have its own separate and dedicated space here within. Right now it's integrated. You have to come in, you have to tell me what you want, and I go and retrieve it. I would like it to have a place like the Square Dance Foundation of New England, or maybe what we should do is do what Maine and Vermont did and start a New Hampshire Folklife Center that people can visit and they can browse this stuff, be in a room with all this material.
Yes.
You know, that would be, I think that's the way people really want to use it. I think we would have more use of the materials if people could browse for themselves instead of having to be come here and be specific about what they want to see and then we retrieve it for them.
Right.
I found out in the early days working on it that that's the way people use it. They just love just seeing what you've got, you know.
Right. Well, I'm sure you're right, and I certainly hope that comes to pass someday.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to, actually, if we to properly preserve it.